All right, Nick Foligno is going to call in here in just a moment. He was officially a Leaf the last couple of games, and the Leafs losing on Monday night in Montreal. They lost in overtime last night. That was a beautiful play by Goodrow to end it. But the Leafs...
Man, seriously.
Again, that power play, man. Like, that's what it keeps coming back to. That four-minute power play they had in the third, they have no confidence. None. You can just tell. They go over the boards. They have no belief they're going to score. And he's trying to mix up the personnel a little bit. He had Robertson on at one point, that second line or the second PP unit. He had Robertson. He had Galchenyuk out there. He's tried Jake Muzzin on the point. Like, they're throwing different things at the wall, but nothing is sticking. And ultimately, it's not going to come down to the second unit. It's got to be Matthews, Marner, Tavares. Those are the big boys. They've got to close, and it's just a rally killer right now.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that, you know, you just got to keep going with your best guys. Like, you look at Washington's near the top of the league. They throw Ovi out there like 90% of the time. Edmonton's near the top of the league. They put McDavid and Draisaitl out there in like 90% of the minutes. I think Keefe in the last eight games has only played Matthews like 60% of the minutes on the power play, which to me, I just don't get that. I don't know why you wouldn't want your best scoring threat on the ice for the maximum amount of time possible.
Yeah, I think at some point that's going to happen. But
you do? Yeah, listen, I don't know.
I think so. Something's got to give.
Yeah.
Like,
listen,
it is what it is. They cannot score on the power play at this point. And it's something you got to work out. You got to have a gun and come playoff time. But 5-on-5, they score, they're, what, top three in the league, 5-on-5 goals. So it hasn't ultimately been a big concern for them in terms of wins and losses prior to the past couple of nights. But I guess we're a week away from seeing Nick Foligno get in the lineup. And I believe he's made his way up to Toronto. I think he drove up, and he's living that quarantine lifestyle. And here he is, one of the newest members of the Maple Leafs. There have been a few new members over the last couple of days. Here's Nick Foligno. How you doing, Nick?
Very well. How you guys doing?
We're doing okay. How's that quarantine lifestyle treating you?
Oh, it's day one, and I've already been bored, so I'm nervous about a couple more days here. But I can't complain. It's all good. It's all for the right reasons.
Yeah. Is it an opportunity for Sheldon Keefe to, you know, bury you with game tape and pick your brain on what you see and what you want to do? I mean, what kind of instructions have the Leafs given you for the upcoming 6 days?
Yeah, I think they were getting through the back-to-back, and then he said he was going to get a hold of me with some game tape and some film of things. So I'm sure I'll be buried in it. And but I've been watching the past few games, and you know, I'm getting excited. Obviously, I'm missing hockey right now. I feel like I'm out of a routine. So I'll be probably happy for the first time in my life to watch game tape. So it'll be fun.
So, Nick, you're obviously an Ontario guy at heart, you know, spending your off seasons in Sudbury. But what's gone through your mind as you've kind of gotten acquainted with Toronto? It's not the same Toronto right now, obviously, from a hotel room. But as you're sort of sitting here in Toronto where your dad played, and I know you talked in your first media availability about your memories of your dad playing as a Leaf in that magical 1993 run, what goes through your mind?
You know, I didn't realize my own reaction and how excited I would be. You know, I think just, you know, obviously my dad played and I was young, but I think just knowing the passion of the fans and remembering that run that they went on and kind of envisioning if we can get something like that rolling, how amazing that would be. You know, my dad still talks about it. So obviously it resonated with him and how incredible and electrifying the city was. So to be able to kind of have a chance to be a part of that and join this team who, you know, has just done such a great job, obviously this season, I'm just thrilled for the opportunity. I really am. I'm excited to come in and help where I can, you know, and already an impressive team and learn from these guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone's talking about, you know, me coming in and leadership aspect, but there's a lot of leaders in that room, and I always love learning from other guys and how they go about it. And so I'm just as excited about, you know, offering up some stuff, but also learning and sitting back and you know, admiring some of the guys in that room that have done it for a lot longer, and it's only going to make me a better player in person.
We're chatting with Nick Foligno. In terms of what you will bring to the table, I think a lot of Leaf fans are very familiar with your game and have seen you play many times, including last year in the bubble, obviously, when Columbus took on the Leafs in that five-game series. But what do you picture as an ideal role for you that would offer up the most production and the most help for the team? Why do you think, you know, Dubas would reach out and say, I got to have Nick Foligno, and here's why, because this is what he's going to bring?
Well, I think they want me in Matthews' spot, first off.
That could help. Could help the power play right now. You never know.
No, I think, you know, I think it's going to be just wherever's needed. You know, I don't really think we've had a real conversation about how it's going to fit, because one thing I've learned in this league is nothing ever goes according to plan. And you can plan it out in a million different ways in your head, but until a guy gets in there, until a guy really finds his role, and whatever role that may be, obviously I'm confident about my abilities and what I can bring, but, you know, whatever the team needs, that's always been my motto wherever I play. You know, I played for Torts, and I've moved up and down and played every position but goalie, it felt like. But that's, you know, I like that. I like that challenge. So that, to me, is what I hope to bring, is wherever, you know, coach needs me or the team needs me, that I'm going to provide that. And you know, I feel confident in that. But also, I'm not going to go in there thinking I got to be this or that. I'm just going to go in there and do what I do. And hopefully, you know, it clicks with the team, which I think it will, because it's already a great team over there. And they, you know, they seem like unbelievable guys, especially the ones I know. And I'm really looking forward to being a part of that locker room.
Hey, Nick, you know, you talked about how, you know, your dad had the trademark jump when he scored goals for the Maple Leafs and the other teams he played for. And you did that on your first goal. Your brother did that on his first NHL goal. But you said you draw the line at bringing back the trademark salad bowl helmet that your dad made famous. did you ever wear that old Northland bucket?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've put it on a few times. And I got to admit, it is the most comfortable helmet I've ever worn. but it is the most hideous helmet I've ever seen. So I don't know how my dad pulled it off. No wonder he had to fight so much, I think, in his career. But yeah, it's we still use it to strain the pasta, I was saying, in the sink at the house. So
that's great.
It's definitely it's up in his office, I think, at last I saw it. And it's so cool how many people, and since, you know, being traded, have resonated with that. You know, they're like, oh, we need you to bring back the helmet. And I just laugh at how that's still, you know, one of the things they remember my dad by. And, you know, it's definitely his trademark. So that's why, that's him. You know, we were cheering him on and doing the jump and all that as kids, but that was his thing. And I think he's really proud that we obviously paid respect to him in our first goals. And but I don't know about the helmet. I don't think I can bring that back.
No, I don't blame you for that. Although it's got character, man. I'll say that. Like, that Foligno, that is your dad's bucket. Like, no one else can wear it. No one else can rock it. He owns it, and he's left his mark on the game. There's something to say about that.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I know Stan Mikita, good. I think, was the other guy that wore it. And I still hear my dad's name more than him, which is impressive for how good Stan Mikita was. So,
absolutely.
Pretty funny.
With Nick Foligno, you've obviously, like you mentioned, you've made your mark on the National Hockey League. You've played 950 games, so you're creeping up on that 1,000-game mark, and that's what Milan Lucic did last night, and Lucic got into a tilt, and it was a pretty good one with Sabourin. Could you see, what do you, I know we're putting the cart way before the horse, but if you were to hit 1,000, would you feel like, I got to fight, I got to score, I have to do something tonight because I'm playing 1,000 tonight?
You got to do something, you know, it's 1,000 game. You want to remember it. So, obviously scoring would be the ideal one. But, I saw that for Lucic, which is impressive. You know, I think he was in my draft class. So starting to see those guys hitting that number, you know, it just makes you realize how far you've come, and it's an amazing honor. You know, I remember my dad doing it and just being so impressed with that and how big a deal it really is. And to be close to it, I mean, it's obviously, it'd be a great, you know, thing to put into my feather in the cap, so to speak. And, but I haven't thought about it too much. I got, you know, some time before then. And I said, I'd like to have about 1,000 playoff games. That would be a way better testament, but it'll be pretty, pretty special. And then neat to see some guys, like I said, from my draft class start to hit that number. And, you know, it's been an amazing ride.
What did you make of the Flames went, the entire team went without helmets in the warm-up, I'm assuming in a tribute to Lucic for his 1,000th game. Where do you stand on that one? Are you a helmet-off guy?
I was until I started losing all my hair. And then, so I'm glad I got it in out of my system when I was young. Now I shaved my head since, so I could probably bring it back and wouldn't look too silly. I would love, we had a team rule in Columbus. You couldn't wear a helmet, and all the guys thought it was because I made the rule secretly. So I wouldn't have to show my head, but it would be, it'd be nice to go no helmet again. I'll see how I feel. If that's an opportunity in Toronto, I don't know what the rule is, but I might throw it out there one time.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of grizzled vets, like you mentioned, on this team. I mean, you started your career, Jason Spezza was on that Ottawa team your first few years there, and Spezza's still in town. And then you would think, you know, Spezza will be 38 this year, that he would be the grizzled vet of grizzled vets, but he's basically a child compared to Thornton. I mean, Jumbo's still kicking around with a beard, and I got to believe Jumbo can basically do whatever he wants. I can't picture Sheldon Keefe telling him, you have to wear a helmet in warm-up. Like, what do you think that experience would be like, getting in the room and seeing guys like Thornton and Spezza and guys that are older than you still kicking around and playing prominent roles here?
I said that, I told that to Spezza already. I'm just so excited not to be the oldest guy on the team anymore. I'm just
right.
A young kid. That's probably why I feel so rejuvenated.
Yeah.
You know, with just those guys around. But I'm really excited to, you know, it's been a while since I've honestly played with an older player, to be honest. It's kind of crazy to say, but we've had such a young team in Columbus. You know, Brandon Dubinsky was the last guy and he was just a year older than me. So, you know, I think I'm excited about, you know, it's always the learning part of it, right? For me. And I think that's when you feel like you stop learning, I think that's when you got to get out of the game. That's probably why you see Joe and the way he is, he just looks like he's having a blast out there, you know, and he's probably having so much fun learning from Marner and Matthews and Nylander and Tavares. And, you know, he just looks like a guy that soaks it all in. So that's what I look forward to doing, when learning from him, learning from Jason again, being around those guys, and how are they able to stay in the game? I'm going to learn that, because, I mean, I don't want to end anytime soon. So what is it that they're doing? You know, so it's exciting for me just to have those guys in the room and learn off them. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Sorry, let me just stop in here, because I want to ask you about, you know, learning experiences based on what you've been saying here. And you played a playoff game. You played multiple playoff series in Toronto last summer without fans, and that's going to be the case again this year. The fans are not on the verge of stepping back into the building. It doesn't appear as if it's going to happen anytime soon. So how can you learn from that experience? What did you learn from that experience? And I'm sure the rest of the team, the Leafs anyway, can learn from that experience that you can apply this year, because it's going to be essentially a carbon copy. You're going to be playing in an empty building for at least the first two rounds.
Yeah. Well, I think I learned that you have to create your own energy. You know, how you play the game a lot of times, you know, catapults you into the game and what you provide. And, you know, I can be one of those guys. I learned how important that was during the bubble. Even early on this year, we had such a young team that didn't quite understand that in Columbus. And when we had no fans, it really affected us. And, you know, it's amazing the teams that can figure out how to play the right way and give yourself energy and allow you to, your game to get going. A lot of times you're the one that has success because of just, you know, your bench comes to life, and your bench is so important for everyone to feel like they're part of the game, and, you know, the energy that you get off of that. So that's something that I noticed, and I'll make sure, you know, I'm kind of going backwards in a weird way. We've had fans in the States for a little while now, so it'll be weird for me to kind of get back into that environment. But, you know, I just have, thank God I have that bubble experience, and even earlier on, that I can remind myself of how important that energy is, the positive talk, the things you're doing on the ice to give yourselves a chance to really come together as a group. And, you know, I think that's obviously, you know, a testament to the Toronto team already. I mean, look what they've been able to accomplish this year. They seem like such a close-knit group and play with a ton of energy and excitement. So I'm just looking forward to adding to that and making sure that that's something I focus on when I get back.
Hey, Nick, I know you talked about how, you know, it meant so much for you to watch your dad play in the NHL in Toronto. You tweeted out as you were leaving Columbus, you know, a nice picture of your three kids. You called them your greatest cheerleaders. I mean, what's that like to leave them behind? And I was just curious about, like, is this a COVID-related decision, or is it a school-related decision, or why did you guys kind of come to the family staying in Columbus instead of Toronto?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both, unfortunately. I mean, just the reality of the situation right now in Ontario, where everything's locked down, and I didn't want to put my family in an experience when they really are able to kind of go about their own life right now with school and activities that are kind of open up in Columbus, and also some familiarity for my kids. You know, as hard as it is, I think they realize they're old enough to know, you know, why I'm leaving, what I'm going to try to do. And I think, you know, having that conversation with them, it felt right to go and focus on this and have them continue on, and, you know, not have them feel like they're burdened or not able to do the things. Cause I mean, three kids and you know, my wife, I think I was saying to her, I'm sure she's going to be losing it on me at some point here once I'm gone. But I think just the understanding of how strong she is for me and knowing the kind of woman she is, that she can hold down the fort. And I think it's given me the strength to decide that this is probably the best bet. You know, it's all, I'm going in here to do a job. And I think they respect that and know how special this opportunity is for me. So as much as it's probably going to hurt me more because, you know, my family is a lot of the reason why I play the game. You know, outside of hockey, that's all I think about. So that'll be probably the hardest thing on me, but I know they'll be busy and probably won't even think about me too much. But I know they're excited for me, and that's all that matters. And, you know, like I said, going back to it, this is an opportunity for me to go and realize my dream of trying to win a Stanley Cup. And we just felt like it was the right move. And I was saying before, you know, this talk about sacrifice you have to make, and as hard as it is to leave your family, I think putting into perspective of what's really going on in the world and all the sacrifices that people are making that are really making a difference in the world, you know, our doctors, our frontline workers, this isn't sacrifice. This is, you know, I'm going to play a game. I'm going to, you know, realize my dream, and these people are fighting life or death every day. So when you put that into perspective, I think it makes an easier decision, and I'll have my kids cheering me on from afar.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well put with Nick Foligno. We'll get you out of here on one more question about your kids, because you got three of them. You play in the NHL. Your brother plays in the NHL. Your dad played in the NHL. So how does the fandom work out with the kids? Because I got to think, you're pushing for one team. Your dad's probably been pushing for a team, if not multiple teams. Marcus, the same thing. Does everyone just follow you in the house? Or are they a fan of their uncle, their grandpa's teams? How does that work out?
My uncle, we call him Uncle Moose. Marcus is Moose. He's got a nickname. I named him that because when he was a kid, he was very uncoordinated. He looked like a baby moose. So it stuck with him ever since. So the kids call him Uncle Moose, and he pulled a fast one on us this year, and he actually sent my kids a bunch of Minnesota Wild hockey gear. My son was playing hockey for the first time this year. He's 5 years old. And so he got his name on his gloves with the Minnesota Wild colors, and so he won up me pretty good, and I'd say they're probably more Uncle Moose fans than Dad fans. Uh-oh. Just because he got them some awesome gear. So I'll have to get them back one day on that. But I think they just love the fact that you know, their uncle and dad play in the league. Their Nono is his name. Grandpa is Nono in Italian, and he played. And I love that we just get to teach the kids the passion of the game. And I think that's been so fun. It was taught by my dad to Marcus and I, and to be able to pass it on to our kids now is just so neat. So I think they're just hockey fans in general. And now I'm trying to teach them about Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. And so they're getting a pretty good schooling right now in the hockey world, and I think they're loving every minute of it.
Yep, that's going to go a long way for sure. Well, welcome to town. We can't wait to see you play, and play for the Maple Leafs, obviously. And good luck with quarantine, and we'll do this again down the road. Thank you for this.
Thank you, guys.
You got it. You got it. There he is, Nick Foligno, one of the newest Maple Leafs. And we had him on the show in August, right before the Leafs played Columbus. And I remember getting off the phone with him saying, that's one of the best interviews in the National Hockey League right there.
Yes.
And I think that was not a hot take. That was a room temperature appropriate take, because he just followed it up. He's an exceptional interview. Awesome to have
him
on.
He really is.
Yeah, he's a guy, I'll bet you could speak to this, Dave. He's a guy you wish the rooms were open, you'd go sit beside him and talk to him for 15 minutes. He would write story after story about the Felinos, the connection with his dad. It really is just one more example of how COVID has affected everything, including this experience for a guy like Nick Foligno, who, you imagine him scoring, you know, like if he was playing, making his debut at Scotiabank on a Saturday night, scores wearing number 71, jumps in the air, the place would go nuts. Absolutely
yes.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. And
yeah,
it's just not going to
exactly
happen. But
no, the guy's, he's been raised right, and you know, you can tell his dad was a super down-to-earth guy when he played. I never covered him. I'm not that old, Hayes, but
right.
But I know one of my old colleagues, Paul Hunter, was telling a story on Twitter the other day about how there was a practice, the Leafs used to practice up at St. Mike's Arena, and they used to take a bus there, obviously, and they would dress at the Gardens, go to the arena in their full gear, jump on the ice, and then take the bus back and undress back at the Gardens. And Foligno came out of practice one day, and he goes to Paul Hunter, "Hey, I'm in a bit of a hurry. You got a car here? Could you give me a ride back to the gardens?" And so he jumps in, you know, this reporter's Ford Tempo or whatever it was, in his full hockey gear. And, of course, you know, chats it up and is just the greatest guy in the world. And that's just how it was back then. Could you imagine, like, Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner or Willie Nylander
right.
doing
Rip
something
Masters
like that?
Trying to get back down to Scotiabank or Jonas
exactly.
or whatever. No, I don't think it's going to happen. But
no one's jumping in Jonas's Honda Fit, right?
No.
Like, it's just not happening.
You know, I don't.
It
full gear, Matthews, Marner, Kristen Chilton cruising around. I don't see it. I don't think it's going to happen.
No. Different world. Different era.
Definitely a different era. But, yeah, Mike Foligno played 1,018 games. Nick Foligno's at 950, and Nick's going to get there. I mean, I think the understanding is, or the belief is, to play this out, probably go back to Columbus, you know, and he's only 33. He's got a few years left in the tank for sure. Interesting what he said, too, about how young Columbus has been, that he's looking forward to getting here and having older players around where
yeah. –
You know, you look at this Maple Leaf team where Spezza's older, Thornton is older, Jake Muzzin would be around the same age, and there's a bunch of guys who are kind of in their 30s. Muzzin's 31, Simmons is 32, about the same age. Like, there's a number of guys. Freddie Anderson's 30, Hutchinson, if he's around, 30. Like, you got a few guys who are, even Tavares is 29, but he's an old 29. He's been in the league for a long time.